Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Seattle's Morning News. I am Greg Tomlin, filling in for Dave Rost and moderator of Face the Nation, Margaret Brennan. Margaret, thanks for joining me this morning.
Great to be with you.
So we're over 5 months into the war in Gaza, and now there are fears growing of an Iranian attack against Israel. Can you tell us about that threat?
Yes. My colleague, CBS News' David Martin, is reporting that the attack could come as soon as today. A barrage of drones, of ballistic missiles raining down on the state of Israel at military targets. So this raises the question of whether those weapons make it through Israeli defenses, whether there are fatalities, exactly what will the impact be, and is that impact something that will force Israel to then retaliate, thus ticking off or starting a tit for tat. Remember last week, it was Israel that went and killed an Iranian general in a strike it carried out in Damascus, Syria. And that is what drew this Iranian response. The United States has been advising Israel, even though it says it was not told by Israel ahead of time that it was going to carry out this killing of the general. It is now advising Israel because the United States does not want to be drawn into a broader conflict.
And so yesterday, the Biden administration warned Iran against any potential retaliatory attack. Is there any teeth behind that warning, or what would a U.S. response look like if this did come to pass?
Well, the State Department and Iranian officials had been passing written messages, as we reported last week, with the United States warning, don't hit U.S. personnel and U.S. facilities in the region. Remember, there are 2,500 U.S. troops in Iraq, there are troops in Syria, and a presence in Jordan. So there are U.S. targets potentially here. The U.S. embassy in Israel has warned U.S. personnel and restricted them from being able to travel outside of Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and another area in order to keep them in a concentrated place with defenses for their own protection. So yes, there is the risk of a U.S. target or the U.S. being drawn in here because of its close alliance with Israel. But that is what the U.S. is really trying through diplomatic channels to keep a lid on in order to, for example, see if it can have have the response from Iran be enough of a statement that it can just stand alone and not require further response from Israel.
Has Iran expressed support of Hamas?
Broadly, going back decades, the Iranian state has funded and provided weapons to Hamas, also Hezbollah, other proxy forces. You'll hear that term a lot when it comes to Iran, that they have this sort of network of militias that receive advice, sometimes strategy from them, and that is scattered throughout the region. When we talk about those Houthi rebel attacks, for example, in the Red Sea, some of those weapons are coming from Iran. When we talk about the attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq, those are carried out by other militias who have some support from Iran. And then you have Hamas. So they're varying levels of help and alliance, and that's what makes this so tricky. This is not Hamas as a state actor for Iran necessarily, but Iran likes to see, or the Iranian regime, I should say, likes to see some of this, some of these pot shots, some of that mass attack on October 7th, remember, the United States said Iran did not have advanced warning of. So the level of coordination is something that's a little hard to pin down.
It appears that there's great dysfunction going on Capitol Hill, particularly in the House of Representatives. Will Congress send aid to Israel? And looking at another conflict, will there be any aid for Ukraine on the horizon?
You are understating it when you say dysfunction. We are at paralysis. We are at complete paralysis, it would appear, in the House of Representatives specifically, which is controlled by a very thin Republican majority, which after April 19th will just be a majority of one vote. right? So they have one more vote than Democrats here. That's how thin it is. It's very thin ice that Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, is on. Today, he's going down to Mar-a-Lago to meet with Donald Trump. And the big question is, can he persuade Donald Trump to endorse that bill to provide aid to Ukraine, to have ammunition and weaponry that the United States produces? And that's not clear. Mike Johnson has been pressed by all of the committee chairs who advise on armed forces, on intelligence, on foreign affairs, saying within his own party, take this vote. Republicans will vote to approve Ukraine aid. He has not put forward the bill despite the support of the majority of his party. He may be waiting for Donald Trump to give him the green light. And then we'll see if we can answer your question about whether that Ukraine aid will go. At this point, it does appear there are the votes if he would just allow for that vote to be taken.
So the big debate happening in Arizona right now revolves around reproductive rights. What does that abortion ruling in Arizona's highest court signal about the 2024 election and how it might unfold?
This is a hot and active issue that, on a cynical political level, Democrats hope will benefit them at the ballot box in November by driving up concern and enthusiasm and galvanizing support from concerned voters across party lines who may be so driven on this single issue of reproductive health access that they may show up, even if they're not enthusiastic about the president on other issues. You hear Joe Biden himself say he's not comfortable with abortion, not a big fan of it, is a phrase he's used in the past on moral grounds. But his position and that of the party is that the right to be able to choose whether to bear a child or not should be protected in law. Now, let's be clear here. There is no federal law at this point that has a shot at passing. The votes just aren't there. The Supreme Court kicked it back to the states. That's where we are with this conversation about the 1864 law being revived. And at the state level, that's going to be up to the state legislature and the governor figuring that out. But it makes it a hot issue where Arizonans may be motivated in November to come out and vote to really send a signal, because this issue will literally be on the ballot for them.
Talking with CBS's Margaret Brennan, and tell us a little bit about what you have coming up on Face the Nation this weekend.
We'll talk about what's happening in Arizona with the Democratic senator from that state, Mark Kelly, along with some of these national security issues as well. We have Christina Georgieva. She is the director of the International Monetary Fund. We want to talk about what the IMF is predicting in terms of the global economy. This is the number one issue for voters, is inflation and the economy, period, no matter what political party you're from. But the United States doesn't live in a vacuum. It's in a global financial system. Is China going to be exporting to us their problems? They're having an economic difficulty at the moment. Will that cause problems in the United States? Also, what does inflation look like? Because these last 3 months of inflation data in the United States are coming in hotter than expected, which indicates that it's not cooling in the way that trend lines had been suggesting before that.
CBS Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent and moderator of Face the Nation, Margaret Brennan, thank you so much for the time this morning.
Thank you.
Time to check in with Chris Sullivan at the Beacon Plumbing Traffic Desk.
And we're still really enjoying a really good drive out there, Greg. This report is brought to you by Kornfeld Law. Do have a little bit of braking now showing up on northbound I-5 past the West Seattle Bridge into I-90, but it's really just...
In the nation's northwest corner is Washington, an evergreen playground blessed by an unusual variety...
Our resident historian Felix Bennell joins us Friday mornings for All Over the Map, a quick look at the stories behind local places and things. This week, an update on the story from a few days ago about a Cold War air raid siren from a Seattle park that ended up in a salvage yard in Kent. Good morning, Felix.
Good morning. Yeah, as you might recall, from Wednesday, Seattle Parks and Recreation last month removed a rare old Cold War air raid siren from North Acres Park and ended up at a private business called Binford Metals in Kent. Seattle Parks say they offered it to two museums 5 years ago, including Mohai, but Mohai says they never got their questions answered and never said no officially to the donation. Now, since Wednesday, I've learned that the other museum they did connect with 5 years ago, the Veterans Museum in Chehalis, they were told that the museum would have to pay all the removal costs, which is why that museum officially did say no. Now, I asked Parks on Wednesday how much they paid contractor Ascendant Demolition for the removal, but they didn't tell me. That's an important point, because if parks had paid for the removal, that might have meant the Veterans Museum would have said yes. So it sort of could have been a missed opportunity. Now, you might also remember from Wednesday, the hope is that Dave Binford of Binford Metals, private business where the siren is now sitting, would be willing to work with high school student Nathan Verres. Nathan's willing to find a museum to officially take possession and to raise the money necessary to restore it, just like he did with the World War II siren from Seattle City Light last year that we talked about. Well, I heard from Nathan late last night. He had just spoken with Dave Binford at Binford Metals.
So I just pretty much asked him, hey, are you like interested in possibly donating it to a museum? He's like pretty much just like, not really. We're just going to like, we have an extra like exact Hemi engine sitting around. They're just going to throw that in. And I think they think it's going to work after that. And then they're going to like use it at their like car events.
So they're hanging on to it. I was surprised to hear that. I asked the Blanchett High 11th grader how the conversation with Dave Binford made him feel.
I was just a little disappointed. You know, I had some hope that it would have ended up in a museum or something. You know, it's just kind of how the cookie crumbles, I guess.
He sounded pretty disappointed to me. I said, worry on a level of 0 to 10, 0 being completely disappointed, 10 having hope. He said a solid 4 to 5 is what he said. Now, I reached out to Dave Binford directly myself last night. After I talked to Nathan, he was kind enough to call me back very late in the evening, and he confirmed he's hanging on to the siren. He doesn't want to go to a museum. He's going to restore it himself and use it there for events at this place that Binford Metals calls their Field of Dreams. Now, I can't blame Dave Binford. He was given a very cool artifact for free that once belonged to all of us, and now he wants to hang on to it. Really, it's Seattle Parks who missed the boat by not doing appropriate due diligence on that artifact, by not following through to find a public home for it at Mohai or some other nonprofit cultural institution that would shepherd it and that'd be accessible to people till the end of time. Now, I spoke with Rachel Shulkin on Wednesday. She's the spokesperson for Seattle Parks and Recreation. I asked her, would they be willing to try and help get the siren back from Binford Metals and get it donated somewhere that you know Nathan could restore it? She told me essentially the siren's no concern of Seattle Parks and Recreation anymore. So all these grown-ups at Seattle Parks, grown-ups at Binford Metals, this big hubbub, and I've helped create a situation by talking about it on the radio, like mm-hmm. the angry historian thing. and now this 17-year-old's trying to fix it. So it's like all the grown-ups did this thing, screwed it up, and the 17-year-old, we're all looking to him to kind of be the salvation. So good luck.
Yeah. And in general, Felix, what's your take on repurposing historical artifacts? I mean, I guess it's better than it turning into scrap metal.
Yeah, it could be really... Oh, yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. This thing didn't go into the grinder the way it could have. So if it ends up coming alive again at Binford Metals Field of Dreams, that's cool. Cooler than it going away, but I still like to see it all fully restored to its Cold War glory and explain the history of it and everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to remind us what it sounded like, let's go out on the sound of the Chrysler Victory siren.
A warning in the key of G. I don't have perfect pitch. I don't know.
There's a Cold War going on with history here in Seattle. Like, I'm happy to feel it.
Let me just remind you what's going on right now on the international stage. What's old is new again.
What are you supposed to do when you see the flash? Duck and cover.
Good advice. We should all be following right now.
Timeless wisdom. Thank you so much for that report. Felix.
It's almost time to clock out for the weekend. Cairo News Radio's Paul Holden has the latest on what's going down in the region.
It's Friday then, it's Saturday, Sunday, what?
It's Friday then, it's Saturday, Sunday, what?
You have done it. Congratulations on making it to the weekend. Your reward? Lots of cool things to do. It's the opening weekend of the Washington State Spring Fair in Puyallup. There's all your classic fair fun, including the motorsports mayhem and a trip back to the Jurassic era with full-scale animatronic dinosaurs. You can get tickets at thefair.com. It's the Seattle Cherry Blossom and Japanese Cultural Festival at the Seattle Center and Armory. You can learn more about why these trees are so popular and their history while enjoying tea ceremonies, folk tales, and other celebrations of Japanese culture. The festival is free, open to the public, and runs today through Sunday, 11 to 5. Tonight at the Hotel Crocodile, it's a night of Latin music and art. There'll be live music, films, photography, tattooing, and food. The event is free to check out, but it is 21 and up. If you want to see some Titans of Comedy, tickets are still available for Tina Fey and Amy Poehler's Restless Leg Tour tomorrow. There are two shows at the WAMU Theater, 3 and 6 p.m. Tickets are limited, and it is a bit on the pricey side of things to do this weekend. You can get tickets from WAMUtheater.com. It's the 35th annual Best of the Northwest Spring Show. It's a two-day show that showcases handmade art from all mediums by over 100 artists. You can even see how the art gets made during the Artists in Action events going on. Plus, there will be demos and plenty of chances to learn a new craft. All ages are welcome, and tickets can be found at nwartalliance.org. If you're like me and holes in your clothes is a common experience, the Refugee Artisan Initiative is here to help with the Public Mending Fair. From noon to 3 on Saturday at the Makerspace, the initiative will help with sewing a button, sewing an open seam, patching a hole, and hemming pants. You can bring up to 3 articles of clothing, and visitors will have up to 20 minutes of free mending service. First come, first serve. More details at refugeesarts.com. Enjoy a cold beer and check out the shops of Georgetown with the Georgetown Makers Market and Bar Hop. There will be 30 shop makers to check out, showing off their goods of home decor, metalworking, prints, and more. Local breweries like Jellyfish Brewing are part of the Bar Hop. The fun starts Saturday at noon. Seattle Restaurant Week begins on Sunday, and if you're curious what exactly is Seattle Restaurant Week,
it's, you know, basically a celebration and support of the greater Seattle area's culinary community. So everyone from restaurants to pop-ups to food trucks, really a way for people to explore the diversity and the craft that's throughout our whole region. So it basically works as a dining promotion for 2 weeks, and restaurants offer curated menus for a bunch of different meals, bunch of different prices, sure to meet any, most budgets, I'll say, but at $20, $35, $50, and $65. Basically, people can use our directory and our map, and they can go out and find menus that look really appealing to them and explore new neighborhoods, new restaurants, and support our local economy over good food.
That's Mariah DeLeo of the Good Food Economy, who is helping put on the event. You can check out the menus and more at srweek.org. If you need some plants for your home or garden, the Washington Park Arboretum is having a plant sale on Sunday from 10 to 2. There will be trees, shrubs, perennials, and more available to buy. Parking and admission is free. These are just some of the many things going on this weekend. If I missed something, or if you know something cool going on, let me know at paulh@cairoradio.com. Paul Holden, Cairo News Radio.
Mariners group outings are a great option for all kinds of events, school family nights, fundraisers, office parties, and more. It's as easy as choosing a game and gathering a group of 20 plus. Start planning your outing today at mariners.com/groups.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With Secret Outlast, you can go for a jog and smell like you did it. With Secret Outlast, you can go for a jog in the middle of August and smell like you did it. With Secret Outlast, you can go for a jog in the middle of August and accidentally finish first in a fun run.
We have a new winner.
And smell like you didn't. With Secret Outlast, you can do anything life throws your way and smell like you didn't. Secret provides 72-hour odor protection. Available in sticks or sprays. Secret works.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
The news broke yesterday while we were on the air. O.J. Simpson passed away, succumbing to a battle with prostate cancer. Of course, the most notable part of Simpson's life, besides his illustrious NFL career and maybe even acting career, was his involvement in the death of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her male friend, Ronald Goldman, or should I say, alleged involvement. We all say the courtroom footage, we all saw the courtroom footage, the white Bronco, the police chase. We have a member of our staff here at MyNorthwest.com who had an inside view into all of the news coverage there. Our editor for MyNorthwest.com, Bill Cazarba, was working with CNN in 1994 at the time of the trial. Bill, can you describe what your role was with CNN at the time of the trial of the century?
Yeah, good morning. I was the executive producer of Dayside coverage, so me along with the executives at CNN and a few other producers were basically in charge of how we covered the trial and what we did with all the material.
And this was kind of a watershed moment, no, for news coverage involving a trial. I mean, this was just years before the explosion of cable news. And would you say that the O.J. Simpson trial kind of changed everything?
I would. It was a trial, as you said, the trial of the century, mm-hmm. which it kind of actually met that billing. And it was also very Hollywood. There was a dream team of defense attorneys. There was a very prominent prosecuting attorneys. There was an unusual judge with unusual rulings. It was a fascinating trial.
Now, what were the conversations inside CNN about during the trial? I mean, were there decisions of, hey, this is a ratings extravaganza, we got to go round the clock with this? Was there any trepidation, hesitation in the round the clock coverage? Give us an inside look behind the curtain.
Well, if you remember, CNN was less than 10 years old at the time, mm-hmm. still trying to establish itself as a credible a news source. We were often called chicken noodle news before this trial. And so we were just picking up things from other organizations and building our reporting staff. So this was the first time you've gotten these incredible ratings. Before, the ratings were probably under, you know, a million people, maybe hour to hour, we were getting 300,000 households. And during this trial, we were more around 6 million.
What do you think of the media attention to the trial and what that it means some 30 years removed? I mean, this was human tragedy. This was murder. This was lies, a heinous crime committed. And I have to tell you, I just finished Neil Postman's book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, which he wrote in 1985. And one of his theses is that the media is the message. In other words, television turns everything into entertainment.
Yes.
And the O.J. Simpson trial was no exception. I mean, all the details of the trial became fodder for late night comedians, for SNL. And it's sort of trivial now in retrospect. Are there good things that came out of the media obsession with this? And is there equally bad things that came out of that?
Well, I think the biggest thing, the reason it began is because you had this well-liked, beloved, superstar football player that had a sparkling personality on television. Then you had this violent crime of his ex-wife and her friend. And then you had the cast of characters. And I think the thing that really made this a big deal was it was in Hollywood. It was Los Angeles. Mm. It was all these different players that were about this trial. And so there was so much drama and so many quirks of the legal teams that were doing things that were playing to the cameras. And that, I think, was what really changed things. It wasn't so much the media. Well, you could argue that the media presence there really changed the public attitudes about the whole trial and the whole legal system.
Yeah, Bill, I was going to ask you, we talked about this yesterday, along that vein, if the cameras hadn't been there, like we see in some trials or in some venues where you can't have venues, you know, and would we have seen the Johnny Cochran, you know, the glove doesn't fit, all of the thing that was a theatrical play because they knew the world was watching? How different would have this been if you guys hadn't have been able to have your cameras there but had to just do stuff on the steps like you used to do?
Right. I think it would have been very different. I think they were playing for the cameras and they were playing for public opinion. And if I recall correctly, the jury was sequestered the whole 11 months of the trial. But there was no way they weren't going to hear about how the public was reacting to this trial.
Yeah, I mean, it was a moment that turned American jurisprudence into show business, and we've never sort of looked back.
Absolutely. I would totally agree with that.
Yeah. Talk about the inflection point this was in terms of race relations in the country at the time. The trial started just on the heels of the Rodney King riots in L.A. And in some ways, we're still feeling the effects of that today. I think of the Derek Chauvin trial and the murder of George Floyd. This is an issue America is still wrestling with, again, 30 years after the O.J. trial.
Absolutely. And what I think, no pun intended, is this put people into one of two categories, black or white, mm-hmm. literally. And there were surveys done at the time that said most African Americans believed O.J. Simpson was not guilty, and most white people believed he was guilty. So now you have this race relation forming about who's right, who's wrong, and who really is people who protect each other. And remember, the relationship with the African-American community and the LAPD was not good at the time. So this even elevated it more.
Yeah. Final thoughts on the OJ trial here. I think it's going to be interesting as his legacy unfolds after his passing. And I think it'll be important to continually reflect on, you know, that fateful trial. I hope that it doesn't become a trivial matter, because two people were murdered and they never received justice over this thing. And I think there are really important discussions to be had. One, like we just talked about with race relations, one in terms of infotainment, and also hero worship of athletes. And this is perhaps a cautionary tale in that regard. So thanks so much for joining us and talking about your experience at CNN some 30 years ago. Really appreciate you making the time.
Appreciate you making the time.
Now joining us from the G and Ursula Show, which you can hear from 9 to noon right here on Cairo Radio, G. Scott. Happy Friday, my friend.
Happy Friday, brother. Good morning.
It was undeniable that this year's women's college basketball was more popular than men's college basketball. I read this morning, G, that the TV ratings for the women's title game outdrew the men's tournament. And anecdotally, I can verify this, you know, Caitlin Clark has sort of become a household name. I couldn't name one men's player this year, and I don't think that experience is unique to me. So, for lack of a better term, could there be a sort of trickle-up effect to the WNBA, G? Could they surpass the NBA next year in attention ratings, or is this a singular moment, do you think?
I think it's the beginning. Let's go back to 1979. And those that have been listening to me for the last 3 months, I've been talking about this topic right here. Larry Bird and Magic Johnson played in a national championship game that year. In the next year, 1980, those two were in the NBA. Before that moment, NBA games were tape delay. So when we, the fans, would see them on TV, my father used to tell me about it, they'd already been played. It was tape delay. But when Magic and Larry Bird got to the league, all of a sudden, it was must-see TV. People wanted to see it, and then we know what the NBA has become since then. Right now, the Indiana Fever have the first pick in the WNBA draft on Monday. Everybody believes that Caitlin Clark is going to be the first pick. Why do they think that? Let me just tell you this. Last season, the Indiana Fever had one national televised game. One. This season, already, they have 36 of their 40 games are going to be on national television.
That's incredible.
Gee, Caitlin Clark hasn't even been picked yet.
Right. This is anticipatory scheduling.
Three, 4 months ago, the WNBA Las Vegas Aces, they are already sold out for the season. That has never happened for a WNBA team. So this is what I'm trying to tell you. When I was growing up, not to bore you all, when I was growing up in the 80s, NFL football was not the biggest thing. I'm telling you. heavyweight boxing. Boxing was a huge deal. I know this because I used to go with my dad and his friends, and that's why I got into boxing, is because that was it, right? Who the heavyweight champion was. You maybe middleweight. Maybe you know who Sugar Ray Leonard is, and all Marvin Hagler and Tommy Hearns and all those. Boxing was a big deal, right? Today, boxing isn't the big deal as it used to be. Why? Because there's tweaks that are made in different sports. NFL said, oh, in the mid-90s, what if we do this fantasy football deal to get fans involved? And even if you're not a big football fan, you'll casually maybe watch just so you can check out what your team is doing. I'm saying that to say this about the WNBA. The WNBA is a competitive game. But there are people sometimes that tell you that it's not true. Those ladies can really play basketball. Offensive continuity, everything that you want to see. What has changed? Names. Games need names. Now, you just said it yourself. You actually know names. You know Caitlin Clark. You know Angel Reese. You know Juju Watkins. You know Paige Beckers. Now that you have names, you have people that you can follow, it's a lot more fun, right? And so coming up behind these players, there's more players to come. So I'm super excited.
And look, out of spite, I stopped watching the NBA after the Sonics left Seattle, but I have a 10-year-old son who loves the game, and in particular Steph Curry, so basketball will be on the TV in my house from time to time. The NBA has changed dramatically, I feel like, in the last 15 years. Traveling is allowed. There's practically no defense. The scores are inflated. And I wonder if people are turning more and more to women's basketball. It's almost a more pure form of the game.
I can't stand the NBA. I really can't.
I don't want to get you going on that.
Oh, yeah. this player's not playing today, Sully, because there's going to be time off. So fans, you paid your money to go to the game, and then LeBron James not playing because he's got to take off. Okay.
Thanks so much, G. Scott. Hear him every weekday on the G and Ursula Show. Thanks so much for that, Chris. All right, it's a very common tale. You go to the auto shop for a quick repair, and they tell you about dozens of problems with your car that need to be fixed, and they can do it at a big cost to you. So to help make sure you don't experience highway robbery, get it, at the auto shop, we brought in checkbook.org's Kevin Brassler. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So your team over at checkbook.org went undercover to find out about which auto shops in seven big cities are charging and overcharging their customers. What did you uncover?
Well, so this time around, we just looked at maintenance. We called our undercover shoppers, called about 230 different shops, including independent shops, quick change places, and new car dealerships. And we had a simple request. We said we have a 2020 Toyota Camry, which was the biggest selling vehicle in that year, for that year, right? And we said we just want 30,000 mile maintenance for this vehicle. What are you going to charge us for that? And we were just astonished at the results. The good news is that most shops quoted prices that were less than $200, but about 30 shops quoted prices that were well over $400, and a handful of shops said they were going to charge us $1,000 or more for this 30,000 mile maintenance. Well, here's the thing. At 30,000 miles, Toyota only recommends a few things for that Camry. They recommend you change the oil filter, the cabin filter, and rotate the tires. So why were so many shops saying they were going to charge us hundreds and hundreds of dollars, $400 or more, just to do those four tasks? Well, not surprisingly, some of these shops were recommending work we didn't need. They'd say, oh, we need to flush the radiator, or we need to, replace brakes and do all this extra stuff that Toyota didn't even recommend, even though we said we just want you to do the things that Toyota recommends. But, even among the shops that said, well, we're just going to do what Toyota recommends, we just saw huge prices. So it made us wonder, okay, what will happen if we call those shops back and say, didn't mention the maintenance package, just said, hey, we want you to do these four things for our Toyota Camry. And a lot of cases, our prices came way down.
Okay, the more specific you can get.
Yeah, so that what they're doing is if you you contact some of these shops apparently and say, I just want 30,000 mile maintenance, they load up their prices, right? They assume you don't really know what the car needs, and therefore they charge you a lot more, even though they're really not doing that much.
My wife faults me for this regularly, but in terms of auto repairs, for some reason, I'm just always assuming goodwill on the part of auto shops.
Yeah.
So one time she actually heard me on the phone say, I just need an oil change. And then I paused and I said, you know, and if you find anything else wrong with the car, I'm happy to fix it. And I hung up the phone and my wife goes, never give them a license to go after every part of your car. Sure enough, they came back and said I needed $1,500 worth of work, which wasn't a surprise to her, but I learned my lesson the hard way there. So are these auto shops that are just giving these estimates of exorbitant amounts, are they just banking on the underlying fact that most consumers won't do their due diligence? And it's obviously working for them in some respects.
Yeah, well, you know, these shops, first of all, they want the maintenance jobs because, as you just said, it gives them an opportunity to inspect the car and find something else wrong with it. And so it's a lucrative business for them. But yeah, clearly these shops are assuming that their customers don't know what the car needs at 30,000 miles. We actually found some of these shops we called didn't know what the car needed. I mean, they asked us, well, I don't know what it needs at 30,000 miles. What does it need? And you say, well, you know, it's the most common selling vehicle for that model year. But on the other hand, in the end of it, we were like, well, at least those shops are being honest. They're just not inflating their prices with a bunch of stuff we didn't need. The thing is that most new cars these days, they don't need a lot of maintenance. It used to be that these cars did need a lot of flushing and this and that, and you had to get your oil changed every 3,000 miles. But a lot of cars these days can go 10,000 miles without having an oil change. We looked at, for this car, for example, for the Camry, you know, at 30,000 miles, it just needed these four simple tasks. Toyota also recommended just those four tasks at 60,000 miles. And even at 120,000 miles, Toyota only recommended changing the oil filter, replacing the cabin filter, rotating the tires. And at that point, the only additional thing was replacing spark plugs. EVs need even less maintenance. I mean, there is no oil to change. There is no transmission. There is no radiator to flush. And so, you know, with those cars, as long as you're monitoring brake and tire wear, you don't really need to do much more with them.
Kevin, let me ask you this. I'm in a current situation, went to a particular shop that is very popular to get something done that happens maybe every April and every November to your vehicle. And they found a bunch of other things that needed to get done, which they need to do. When, as a consumer, while I may know what my car needs, I don't know what the actual price should be. Yeah. Like, say, for instance, I need a rear brake job. And the company that's like, oh, that found it said, well, here's a quote for X. Mm. How do I know whether or not that's the price it should be so that you know that when someone gives you an offer, whether they're even in the ballpark?
And
how
just
do you
to,
do that?
Just to piggyback on that, Chris, too, I've often gone to Google, where a lot of us do in this day and age, to try to get the facts, even though, yes, there's a lot of disinformation out there. But what's presented to me in terms of what something should cost in terms of maintenance is also regional as well, which, you know, it's different probably in downtown Seattle than in Ording or something like that.
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, we've been for more than 40 years now, have, you know, used our undercover shoppers, our researchers have collected prices for all kinds of different things, from, you know, veterinarians, home repairs, and auto repair is a big one. And we find that, you know, even among shops, when we ask them to do the exact same work, replace, you know, brakes on a certain model of car using OEM parts, we see huge price differences from shop to shop. And it's not just for auto repair. For plumbing work, for dentistry, for every local service that we've shopped, we see massive price differences. Some companies charge three times more than others do for the exact same thing. And the reason we see these big price differences, it's not necessarily the location of the place, whatever. It's that they know most consumers don't shop around because it's a pain to collect three quotes for roofing work or even for brake work.
But if I say I know it's supposed to be $720 and you're charging me a grand, can I go, well, you know what? It's supposed to be $720. You either pay that or I'm out. I mean, how do you – that's a big ask to be kind of that gutsy as a consumer, I guess.
I don't think I would ask them to lower their price. I would shop around and find a lower cost shop. Mm-hmm. And that's why at Consumer's Checkbook, when we evaluate local services, we shop them independently. We use our own shoppers to collect prices from them because it lets us evaluate the companies, not just on the quality side where we're collecting ratings about all these companies, but on the price side separately, because most consumers don't know they're overpaying or paying a good price because they don't do the shop, because it is a pain to shop around. At least for auto repair work, I think if you take your car in some place and they say, oh, you need this work done, Well, assuming that's correct, that they've diagnosed the problem correctly, it at least gives you information to say, oh, I'm going to call other shops to make sure I'm not overpaying. And then really, unfortunately, that's the best way to determine whether you're overpaying.
But Kevin, here's another complicating factor, and that is sometimes you get what you pay for. So if someone comes back and says, yeah, this should be $800, but we charge $300 here, is that a sign that, oh, I should be wary, I might not get the top quality work I'm looking for in this instance?
So here's the thing. We've been at this for 40 years now, collecting prices, having consumers rate shops and dentists and everybody else on quality. And the saying that you get what you pay for when it comes to local consumer services is a myth.
Oh, okay.
That good companies, good auto repair shops, for example, are just as likely to charge high prices as low prices. It's the economy of local services in terms of price is chaotic. And the only prediction we have in terms of whether a place is going to have high prices or low prices has nothing to do with, say, you know, the quality of the work they're doing. It just depends. A lot of these places, it really, I think it's tied to how much profit they need to take in. If they, you know, if it's four family members running the place and they each have four homes and four families to support themselves, then prices are likely to be higher. But I get asked all the time, well, why do prices vary so much? And my answer continues to be, we just don't know. Hmm. I mean, there is no one answer for it.
Case by case basis.
Some companies just have far higher prices. And really, the reason the prices are chaotic, it's very difficult for consumers to shop around, or they just don't shop around. And so, you know, roofing companies, for example, just charge whatever they feel like charging because they know it can kind of get away with it.
Checkbook.org's Kevin Brassler, thank you so much for joining us. If you're looking for a link for Checkbook's ratings of auto repair shops, go to checkbook.org/CairoFM/auto. All right, we have reached the final countdown here on Seattle's Morning News. And so, of course, we bring in Mickey Gomez. Mickey, apparently one of the country's best kept secrets is just down south on I-5 from us in Camas, Washington. What's the story here?
So what they're saying in Clark County and then in Eugene, Oregon, that it's two of the most amazing places to live in the United States. Now, I've been to neither area, so I can't attest to this, but I will tell you that the Times says that it's not just college town, that there's a lot of art, there's beauty, there's community, there's social gathering. I love that Sully is just nodding his head and going, yes, yes, and yes. And those are the kinds of places that I want to visit and travel. So I'm really excited that two of the best places to live in the United States are right here in the Pacific Northwest. And I'll be the first to say my daughter does want to go to Eugene for college.
Okay.
That's what she's eyeballing.
Travel south could be in your future.
Try to not be too upset as a Husky.
It's beautiful.
I know.
That town is beautiful in the fall.
That
town is beautiful. And there's a lot going on down Eugene. Now, Camas. I will too, but I'm just kind of trying to think about it because, I mean, I love Camas. I have lots of friends that are from Camas. I mean, I love playing the golf course in Camas. There's a lot kind of going, a lot of kind of land and stuff out there, but I've never kind of really been in and around because I usually end up back in Vancouver instead of doing, but I mean, it's beautiful, but I don't know as much about the amenities there as I do Eugene.
And I've been to Vancouver as well. We go to Portland a lot because we have basketball tournaments. I love seeing, you know, Mount Hood. I mean, all of that is just beautiful, but I think I've driven through Camas, but I've never really been there.
Okay.
So it's quaint.
They sort of redid the downtown area. So it's nice and quaint. You know, there's plenty of shops. What's nice is it's right along that Columbia River Gorge. You get a lot of beautiful nature around there. I've got my sister lives out that way. What I love about that area specifically is you've got access to the river, you've got sort of the mountains and the hills, you got lots of trees, and it's remote enough that you feel like you're away from things, but it is still fairly close to I-5. You can get down to Portland easily.
For me, I need diversity. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I love those quaint little towns, especially the ones that have history, like Camas. The downtown was built in 1883. I love history. Mm-hmm. I love kind of seeing those old buildings with more of a modern vibe, but I need some diversity. You know what I mean?
Well, it brings to mind the question, how would you define hidden gem? And is it different strokes for different folks? Right. Are we talking about aesthetic beauty? Are we talking about the quality of the people and the town, the restaurants? So your perfect definition of a hidden gem, Mickey, what would that that include for a city around the Pacific Northwest?
I'd need, well, I need ocean view.
Okay.
For one
check,
thing. I need ocean view. I need to see people like me that look like me walking around the building, shopping and not just working and cleaning. I need, why are you laughing, Sully? I need a little bit of posh.
Okay.
I like a little posh. I love local. I love businesses owned locally. I don't like to come into a town where there's a lot of like major grocery stores, major restaurants. I like local. I like wineries. I like bed and breakfast. That's my aesthetic.
To me, the perfect place is, and this isn't a hidden gem. Everyone knows about Port Townsend, but Port Townsend to me is the perfect small town. It has not quite gotten to the popularity where, you know, there's a ton of new developments there. It still has all of that character that you want of this sort of small maritime town. Mm-hmm. And it's got so much natural beauty. You've got the ferries going across there. You've got the ocean.
Yeah, definitely. Sam, you go to Oregon a lot.
Yes, I do.
That area.
Yeah.
What do you know? Have you seen Camas? Have you been through?
Yeah. So as you know, my fiance lives in Hood River, Oregon. And if we're talking about, you know, gyms, Hood River is it. It's not exactly hidden. It's well known
at this
beautiful point. But if we're also talking about Washington, let's talk about Binge and White Salmon area and the best bakery I have ever been to there.
Yeah.
The White Salmon Baking Company is just incredible.
I need to go there.
Well, and you bring up an important point there, which is I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, was born and raised Bothell, Kirkland area. And I feel like what used to be a hidden gem was Leavenworth, Washington. Yeah. But the secret is out on so many places within Washington State nowadays. And part of me mourns that. And then part of me also celebrates it and goes, well, now it's more enjoyed by more people. And thank God they get to enjoy the blessing of it as well.
And space in your heart to welcome a new hidden gem.
But I hope it's just not tarnished and completely changed the essence of a lot of these hidden gems.
No, and I totally get that, because when we first got here, everyone said, you got to go to Leavenworth. You got to go to Leavenworth. Mm-hmm. I went to Leavenworth and I said, I got to check out of this place. Mm. I can't. It was too much. It was too touristy. It was too. So we stayed in Wenatchee. Love Wenatchee.
Yeah. Yes.
Anyway.
Mickey Gomez, thank you so much
for your
time. Thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News, the podcast. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. You can find our podcast weekday mornings right at 9:30.
And if you subscribe, you will never miss the Daily Dose of Kindness.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.